Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in DC. Today, my returning guest is Cliff Schechter. Oh my God, there is so much to talk about. But before we get into it,
the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now please enjoy my conversation with Cliff Schechter. Welcome back to the show, Cliff.
Thank you. It's great to be on your show as always, Kimberly. How are you?
I'm good, and I didn't realize you were on Bob's show yesterday, because we try not to do too many, you know, guests too close together, but you are Cliff, and you are one of the family. And there's new things to talk about, even from yesterday. So I think probably we're going to cover some of the same area. I know we are. The first thing I'm going to talk about is the VP pick, but, and I know you guys talked about that yesterday, but I got some thoughts and feelings, and I just want to know what you have to say.
Sure, so, well, I'd like to hear your thoughts and feelings. You are correct in that I am Cliff. That is actually accurate. I'm not sure that makes me special in any positive way, but it does make me me.
Yes.
And luckily, I've somehow tricked you guys into thinking I have smart things to say. So good for me.
You're part of our family. All right. So all right. Now I've got a bunch of things to say here. And number one, I'm going to go with strategery, right? So I'm not coming from an emotional standpoint when I make this prediction. I'm coming from a strategic standpoint, which is different.
Are you sure? JD Vance tells me that all you guys can do is be emotional.
We're just emotional.
You don't know what you're doing and pump out babies and like, you know, and stuff like that. So I don't know. I'm kind of
I know. JD has all the answers. But okay, so here's the deal. I predicted the other day on my Facebook page that Walz was going to be the pick. And the reason was not emotional. I mean, I actually like him and he is my first choice, but that's not why I think he would be the chosen one for VP, because I think, you know, first of all, he coined that weird moniker that everyone has embraced. Everyone.
Yes.
And it
Although
works.
I'm going to point out, that I've been making videos for months calling Trump weird, creepy,
yes, you
crazy.
Have.
And no, it wasn't me. He coined it. I'll give it to him. But I was so happy to see that because I was like, yay, we're messaging. We're messaging. Like, the guy grabs an American flag when he's on stage. He's done it two or three times and starts humping it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he kisses the helmet of a dead guy whose wife he hasn't even called to express sorrow at the RNC convention. That's a stick figure of the guy who gave his life right. for his family. You know, he talks about being attracted to his freaking, you know, daughter. Tells us to inject bleach. I can go on and on, obviously. I mean, he's a fucking weirdo creep.
He is.
And he's a creeper with like 13-year-olds and whatever. So, like, I never understood why when they would call Biden old, the response wasn't right away. Well, okay, Biden's old. This guy's old and fucking creepy. You know?
But creepy, anyways, dangerous, and weird. Yeah. So, he does get the credit for, you know, describing them as weird just because he had a national platform. But
he does, absolutely.
Yeah, and the cool thing, though, is that it took, and people are using that term. And just really quick as a side note, there are some people going, wait, weird isn't bad. There's like capital weird, which is Trump, and then there's lowercase weird, which is just regular people like me who I think I'm a little weird and that's cool, and you're a little weird, and that those are the cool people in my opinion. But then there's just like fucking weird people like Trump.
Weird as in holy shit, that creepy motherfucker is a total freak, fuck, bizarre, weird ass fucker.
Yes, and liberals have a tendency to get really scoldy on things like this, and it's like, we need to shut the fuck up and embrace this weird thing because there's a meme going around, and I wish I would have saved it, but basically it was somebody said, my college professor said, you know, Nazis like it when they're called dangerous because it makes them feel like, oh, we can scare everybody, but they don't like to be mocked, and so we need to mock the fuck out of them.
We're getting that shit too, right? You know, I mean, again, I'm not the only one.
No, we've Rachel all been mocking him.
Rachel Bitticoffer has been out there. Well, I'm not the only one. We've all been mocking.
Right.
But I've been yelling forever at my YouTube channel, whatever. Like, please mock them.
Yes.
Please stop. Please, like, every time I would hear a Democrat where they repeat some lie, mm-hmm. some insult, some garbage from the likes of Mike Lee or Ted Cruz or Rand Paul or one of those douches or, you know, Matt Gaetz or whatever, and the response would be, oh, they should be ashamed of themselves.
Right. They're not going to be ashamed.
I'm like, they're never going to be ashamed of themselves. And every time you have a microphone in front of your mouth
mm-hmm.
is an opportunity to repeat a message that you want to you drill home about your opponent. It's not, well, they just said that Kamala, you know, didn't really think she was black or whatever. And I'd be like, well, that's interesting coming from a weirdo like J.D. Vance, who's had four different names during his lifetime, can't seem to decide where he was born in the western part of Ohio or Appalachia. I guess he doesn't have a map on him. You know, once called Donald Trump America's Hitler and right now has become a white nationalist but married a Hindu and had a Hindu wedding and gave up meat for her. So I don't know if there's anybody here who's weird who can't seem to figure out who they are and what they stand for. That might be J.D. Vance.
For example,
that could be a response.
Yes, exactly.
Maybe, you know, I mean, that's how you respond when you're attacked. You counterattack.
Yes.
And you mock. And so to see, mockery works. Politics is psychology.
Yes.
When people look at people as a joke, they're done.
Exactly. And that's what, yeah. And that's, you know, I mean, I get that liberals are tolerant and loving, but when you need to fight, we're not going to cheat. We're not going to become Nazis to fight Nazis. So the best way to do it is to make fun of them. And making fun of them means, yes, we have to hurt their feelings, but they're trying to destroy the country. So you need to get over it.
They're fascists. Yes. If you hurt their feelings, fuck them. I mean, I'm sorry, but I want my kids to grow up in a democracy. Like,
yes.
They're launching these vicious attacks against not just people like you and me who can defend ourselves, you know what I mean, but Trump is mocking all sorts of they've insulted and attacked children, you know, they've assaulted and attacked people that are from the disabled community, like they're horrible, vicious people. You shouldn't feel any fucking, you know, empathy for them. I have empathy for most of the world, not them.
No.
And there's just no reason why, I've always driven me crazy, you can't be a good-hearted, kind, liberal person. Kindness should never be mistaken for weakness.
Right.
I am kind to people when I first meet them. I'm kind as much as I can be, but when you have lost me, when you are harming my family, when you are harming my country, and that includes Republicans, that includes the fucking corporate media, that includes all these people, no. Mm-hmm. You again, I have no empathy for you anymore. I will call you every name that mocks you. I will insult you every chance I get. I will go after you, and we can exist and have both of those inside of us at the same time.
Yes, and we have to. We have to. But I want to get back to Waltz because, you know, I predicted him. But, and then when I did this on my Facebook page, you know, people kept they would
people
share.
People acted like they did on social media. Fuck you, Kimberly. What do you have against Bashir?
Exactly. But yeah, well, what they.
Because you don't like Buttigieg.
But what they did was they. So I said, you know, I mean, I didn't, I wish I would have said this is not emotional, that it's strategic, but I basically just said, you know, I predict the pick will be Waltz. And so people are like, you know, Kelly, this one, that one. And so it's like, fine, those are the people that they wanted, and that's fine. And maybe some people were making predictions, maybe some people were, you know, giving me their emotional pick. But here's the deal. People would throw out Josh Shapiro. And the reason I think she's not going to, there's several reasons why I think she would avoid him. And there's an uncomfortable truth here that I'm going to talk about, and anybody who gets mad at me needs to go focus on Josh Shapiro.
And I'm
going to
start off by saying, before you say that, anybody who does that, fuck you, because I'm Jewish and I know what Kimberly's about.
No, it's not that. It's not that. That's part of it.
And I have no idea what Kimberly's about to say. So, ha ha on all of you.
But look, there are several things. But the first top thing is that there's all kinds of articles. You can Google it all over. But basically, he covered up for sexual, it's a sex scandal, so he covered up for an aide, right? I think there was a payoff of over $200,000, and I believe that the woman involved is, there's an NDA. Gretchen Carlson was on CNN the other night calling for Josh Shapiro to let her out of the NDA. There are women's groups calling on Kamala Harris not to consider Shapiro for this position for that reason.
Oh, yeah.
Now I got yelled at.
If we're at that point, then it's not going to happen.
Right. And there was a woman on my page who yelled at me because she was saying that this was a hit job, a hit piece, whatever. And my response is, it is not. But if it were a hit piece, it's still the optics. And a huge reason why Biden was kicked out of this race was because of optics. And we have a prosecutor. Kamala, the woman I had on my show last week talked about when Kamala was young, she met this girl who was like a young girl. She met this young girl who was abused by her family. And Kamala said, oh, my God, you have to come live with us. And this was when she decided or started thinking about becoming a prosecutor. And she's prosecuted people for sex crimes. It doesn't seem like a good idea to whether, let's just say this isn't even a real scandal. Let's just say this is not true. She's still inviting that red meat in, you know, the Republicans are already talking about it. Literally, Trump could murder 40 children on television and the focus would be this fucking aide in the Shapiro camp.
Again, like what you were doing, and what people can't seem to do, not I shouldn't say people, many people who are on our side can't seem to do on social media is put their emotions aside. That sometimes we're going to be emotional, all of us, and I am too, are going to let our emotions flow. And sometimes I'm going to, and I usually say this to people, I'm going to try to be what I've been hired to be before in certain situations, an objective analyst. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that, so I'm going to say quite clearly, I don't know anything at all about this Josh Shapiro story. Mm-hmm. So I am not saying it's fake or real. I'm saying I don't know.
Yeah.
But what I am saying is that if there's already women's groups out there who are talking about it, if there is, or there's paperwork out there about it, if there's whatever, then it is going to be an unnecessary distraction. It is going to take the campaign off of its message mm-hmm. of healing and being united and moving forward and all of that. And obviously, if he really did it, then he's not the person I thought he is, and I don't want him to think it anyhow.
Yeah, so, I mean, and then you bring up the Jewish thing, and you know,
I don't think it's worth opening that can of worms. I'm just going to be honest with you, and I can say this to somebody who's Jewish. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, I have my own strong opinions. I've talked about them on this show before. They tend to go down the middle in a pretty moderate position on all of this, mm-hmm. but there's no winning that battle. There's none. And the Russian bots are going to go into overtime. Her husband's Jewish, Kamala's. I don't think they're going to be able to make much hay of that mm-hmm. because he doesn't speak out on issues. He's smart mm-hmm. and stays away from it all. Mm-hmm. But Josh Shapiro has. And I think we get pulled into a debate on an issue just because of his religion. It's not fair, but again,
no, it's not fair.
Politics is not fair. Politics is what it is. So it's the same way I'm going to say to you, you know, politics is not fair. I don't know what their polling is saying, but I get worried. I absolutely fucking adore Pete Buttigieg. I love him. Mm-hmm. I think he's one of the best Democrats in the history of the Democratic Party on mm-hmm. TV. But is adding him to a ticket, is that too much diversity, you know? And is that at a point where we need to win some of these white guys too? And again, whoever wants to be screaming, oh, you don't care about white guys. I care about winning.
That's the thing.
I happen to be Jewish. I don't give a fuck about.
And yes,
you know, I put everything aside. I want my. Here's what I care about. You want to know what I care about? What do you think? My kids growing up in a democracy and my country moving closer to the country that it was and that it was meant to be. Those are the things I care about here. And I would throw in my friends and other folks like you who I care about, who I don't want to be hurt under a Trump administration. So everything else gets thrown aside, whether it's fair or not fair, that's life. We've all not gotten certain jobs for unfair reasons. We've all had other things happen to us. I don't care. I love Buttigieg. But they're doing polling. I'm not. Mm-hmm. If it says to them, I mean, we've gotten to a great place of acceptance for gay marriage, gay equality. But if it says them, it's going to cause complications because of who's at the top of the ticket, then I don't. So, I mean, I think for me, I like Tim Walz a lot. I would think at this point, sorry, you know, I'm just a little bit probably. I don't know who your average audience is. Maybe I'm not older than some of them. I'm making it sound like I'm like old man, whatever, instead of in my early 50s.
Old man Cliff.
Yeah, exactly. But as someone in my early 50s, born to politics in 1992, I will never forget how the imagery, picture being worth a thousand words, of these two young, good-looking governors from the South who were moderate to liberal, who had young wives, and that was the only diversity, by the way, we could get in 1992. We weren't getting a woman. We weren't getting anybody black or Jewish or anything like that. You know, we were getting the diversity was George H.W. Bush was like 70 or whatever he was, and these two 40-something, mm-hmm. early to mid 40-something guys and their young wives and their liberal positions, and they clicked together, and the imagery just was explosive. Mm-hmm. All right. And that is why when it comes to J.D. Vance was picked as an arrogant move, but also a self-assuring the base. Mm-hmm. They lost in 2020 some center-right to right conservative white males in certain places who are like, okay, I voted for Trump in 2016, but that guy is fucking nuts. Or yes. That guy is just too much of an idiot. I can't justify it. J.D. Vance was supposed to be the intellectual right-winger, right? Who would win them back because they felt like, okay, here's a guy who went to Yale, is smart, you know, has intellectual justifications. Of course, they're all just horseshit and he's a liar. But, you know, for what he believes, has, you know, connection to the venture capitalist community, blah, blah, blah. And they thought in places like Michigan and Pennsylvania, he could win back some of those independent white males and whatever. Well, you know who's even better at winning those voters than he is? Andy Beshear. Yeah. Andy Beshear is young, and Andy Beshear is terrific on camera. I mean, he's the one who came mm-hmm. up with the zero convictions. You know, J.D. Vance has zero convictions, and Donald Trump has 34, which has already got under J.D. Vance's skin to the point where he felt the need to respond, which is hilarious because you're responding to a governor, and you're supposed to be above him. You're the VP pick. And he's won those voters in Kentucky. Is he going to win Kentucky for us? No, he's not at the top of the ticket. But Appalachia is big, and so are some of these conservative rural areas. Mm-hmm. Appalachia goes through Ohio. It goes through North Carolina. It goes through Pennsylvania. Number of swing areas. There's a lot of white, moderate suburbanites in Florida where apparently we're within a couple points now. We don't even need to win, but if we made them fight for Florida and actually have to spend time there, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. they're fucked.
Yeah, and then there was some state, and I wish I could remember what it was, but it was going, you know, all over social media. These people who were Republicans voted for Donald Trump. There was a man and a woman. They both voted for Donald Trump twice. They were planning on voting for him this third time until Kamala came into the picture. Now, the woman, you know, her whole thing was, yeah, I voted. And I'm gonna say she's not a Trump supporter. She's a Trump voter, which I believe Jen Kirkman differentiated. So she's not like the MAGA crazy.
She's not a MAGA core loon.
No. She just has her
enough people who justify to themselves that he's the lesser of two evils. It drives me crazy. But yes, they're out there. There's many.
And it's more of a thing. Oh, let's throw this person into the ring and see what happens. And they don't have the kind of perspective that we do or other political junkies. It's just a different thing. So anyway, this woman basically said, yeah, I'm going to consider Kamala now. And then there was this man. He was an independent, right-leaning, and I mean, he looked like a typical Trump voter. And he's voted for Trump twice and said, okay, now I have to think about this. Now, you throw in an Andy Beshear, you throw in a Tim Walz or even a Mark Kelly. Those men are the kind of men, especially Kelly and Walz, that can walk into a diner and talk to those people. Like Josh Shapiro is not one of those people.
My problem, and I wish this weren't as big an issue as it is. My only problem with Kelly, who I love, who's an American hero in I don't know how many different ways, is that he just doesn't seem to be comfortable in the vice presidential role. He is not a good attack dog. He's uncomfortable with
That's
it.
Where Walz comes in. That's why he checks off all the boxes. Well, Beshear too.
Walz is in my top two. Yeah. I'm just saying, for me, I think a Beshear can go to rural Wisconsin. It's not like his whole persona only plays in Appalachia.
Right.
It does, and it completely undermines J.D. Vance. One claim J.D. Vance makes, and he can do what he did on TV, and I pointed out he's a fake Appalachian and a liar and, you know, and all that stuff. And so he can stop his appeal to these white men he's trying to appeal to. But I think he also will appeal to Gen Z. I think he'll also appeal to women. I think because he's pro-choice and unapologetically so. He's for universal background checks. He believes in climate change and thinks we need to do more to fight it. He is somebody who knows how to speak the language of these conservative rural areas. And you can do a series of events where you have bus tours with the two of them, you know, around key states and key suburban areas. And then you can have Kamala go off at sometimes on her own to other suburban areas, to areas in the cities and whatever, and send this guy out to rural areas. And I promise you, we don't need to win those areas. We just need the vote to be big enough. That's how we ended up changing things to a certain degree. We got more turnout, but we also we lost by smaller margins in a lot of the rural areas from 20 to 16. And look, some of that was pure sexism and was bullshit. I'm not saying, again, I'm talking as an objective analyst right now. I'm not speaking from my moral base. And as an objective analyst, I feel like Beshear, the only thing, you know, I do think that I love Walz. I just think he looks a little older and undermines some of that imagery. And again, I'm not criticizing him.
No, I get it. I mean, everything is optics.
He's in my top two. You know, he's probably my second choice.
Everything is optics. Everything is optics. And I mean, David Hogg loves him, so there's that. But, you know, I mean, I get what you're saying about Kelly, and I feel the same way. I think really the top two would be Beshear and Walz. And I mean, I'd be happy with either one of them. And I trust Kamala Harris. I can't imagine. You know, there's also the whole thing about Israel and Shapiro, which is I saw somebody on who I followed.
And he's not a great on camera. I don't mean to cut you off, but that's another strike, which like Kelly, he's just not.
He's not great on camera. Yeah,
the
exactly.
Attack dog role. He's not charismatic. Yeah. He's not. To me, the three people you need, somebody, Walz, Beshear, and Buttigieg are fucking knife fighters on TV.
Yeah,
and
they are.
They do it with a smile, and they're good at it. So to me, it has to be one of those three, in my opinion. And if the problem is that Buttigieg makes it so it's more complicated because of too much diversity, so that the white guys get scared, then to me, it has to be Beshear or Walz. And I would say Beshear is my first choice then, but Walz is my second, and I would be happy with either one.
Right. And then I also saw on Threads the other day, somebody who I followed for a while, so it's not just some rando that I'm not familiar with, said if she chooses Shapiro, he or she, I don't know if it's a male or female, said that they were not going to vote for her based on that alone. Now, I would imagine there's a lot of people who feel that way, and that's one of the benefits.
From my perspective, now I'll go back to the moral me. Whoever that is an anti-Semite can go fuck themselves from my perspective, because I'm not that. I am going to let my real feelings be known on that. There's real politic me. And then and I'm only saying that because you're saying it's not a rando. It's somebody you actually know. Well, anybody I know, if I see that shit from them, they're dead to me.
Yeah, I unfollowed them immediately. I was like, I can't.
They're
anti-Semites,
and they can fuck off.
Yeah, and not only that, aside from that, I mean, you're putting everybody at risk, because I get the whole genocide argument. I get that. But if you get Donald Trump, he's going to bomb them into a parking lot. So it doesn't make any sense. And people have this false sense of superiority. And I get I know that a lot of people don't agree with how Joe Biden has handled it. But see, that's also the beauty of Kamala Harris stepping in, because that kind of all just disappears.
It's a whole new slate. Yeah. It's not. And I disagree with them, by the way, on Biden. I don't think there's a lot that he could have done. I do think that Netanyahu is a war criminal and a piece of shit and should be locked up for how he handled it. But and again, I don't want to get deep in this conversation, but I do think that the problem is if you bring Shapiro in, you open that debate again. Whereas we got rid of that debate with Joe Biden.
Yeah, it's and done. Like, let's not go back there.
Again. Let's just not. There will be a certain amount of radical fucking left people who, you know, who just there, nothing is good enough but except for the destruction of the state of Israel and people like me being thrown in the sea, mm-hmm. and they can fuck themselves too.
Yeah.
But I don't. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about people that are more moderate on the issue, that are reasonable, but are pro-Palestinian rights, which, by the way, I am, mm-hmm. And don't want anybody innocent being bombed and
right.
hurt.
Me neither.
Why get it? You know, if you can win those folks back, why get into this debate? Why even drag this debate back out? It's not worth it. And if we're going to have a million articles written, which we are, and they're not going to all be positive, sadly, and they have to anticipate this about Pete Buttigieg being gay and all this other stuff, and we think that Americans can pretend on the surface they're tolerant, but deep down, it may lead them to not vote for us. And again, this is about saving democracy, mm-hmm. about our families. That has to come before political correctness, okay? And I mean it in the sense of political correctness as in we're going to pick somebody for that reason, not political correctness as in
right.
I'm only saying being gay is okay because I'm politically correct. It's okay, it's equal, and fuck, it may be superior to being heterosexual. Because frankly, the percentage of people I know who are gay or good people is fucking well above the number of heterosexuals. But right now, I want to win.
Yeah, and that's the whole that's the whole fucking point, is that it's
Bashir and Waltz are the two who can just go on news and eviscerate the other side and undermine all of their claims and do it with a smile on their faces. And like, that's why I've ended up at that place.
And voting is a business decision, so we just have to treat it accordingly. Okay,
that's
now
right.
Now I want to switch over to a different subject, because oh my god, well, this is kind of two in one, right?
Can I say one thing though to that, though, also to that, is I mean, I'll accept like what you're saying, voting is a business decision, but to me, voting is also a mature human being decision. Okay, in your life, there are a lot of times where you're presented with two situations, and you may actually not find either of them perfect. But what you do is you choose the better one,
right?
Because it's going to have a strong impact on your life.
Yes.
And so stop personalizing it if you're doing that. Step back for a second and stop making it about personalities and look at what Kamala Harris stands for. Mm-hmm. Do you want Roe versus Wade or even beyond Roe to be codified?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want universal background checks and an assault weapons ban? Do you want us to take action on climate change? Do you want us to take action on equality for all races and all people? You know, do you want us to stop letting billionaires get away with not paying taxes? I mean, Biden's tax bill did some of that, especially with big corporations. But I mean, head more in the direction of breaking up monopolies, taking seriously what, and this is one of the areas I'm probably the most left on, is like these people that make tens of or hundreds of millions of dollars, and then they pay the same tax rate as somebody who makes $250,000 mm-hmm. a year.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, somebody who makes $250,000 a year is doing great, they should be taxed. But I'm sorry, somebody making $250,000 a year isn't Jeff Bezos. The fact that we don't have two more tax brackets on top, like the one that AOC talked about, 70% for people make $10 million, and for anybody who understands marginal tax rates, that's not 70% of every dollar. It's every dollar above $10 million
right.
a year
yeah.
that you make. I'm sorry, but that is just common sense
yes.
when you need money for infrastructure and you don't want to have these ruling oligarchs like we have, that
mm-hmm.
and breaking up monopolies. Kamala will fight for all those things, and if we hold the Senate, kick Ted Cruz and Rick Scott's fucking asses out of there and hold the people we've got, and we win the House and get rid of the filibuster, this isn't a dream. It will all be passed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, I didn't mean to belabor this, but voting is the act of a mature individual in a democracy. If you can't get yourself out there to vote for somebody who is the far better of the two options, then, you know, when you're looking at this, when one is a traitor and a rapist and mm-hmm. a convict and a million other horrible things, if you can't get out there and vote for Kamala Harris, you honestly don't deserve the privilege of living in a democracy. You should have to live in Iran. You should have to live
in Russia. See, at least for 5 years, so you can get a real understanding of what it's like. I mean, I had the opportunity to live in Soviet Russia. Even though I was 12 years old, I got such an education, and it really, I mean, I don't think I would have been, you know, an irritating, you know, far leftist or anything like that. But it really drove home the importance of being, for me, it actually taught me what a patriot was. And, and I understood, oh, wow, we really have a lot of freedom. And this, you know, this, basically I lived in a police state. So yeah, I think they should have to live
in a
police state.
I can't claim to have lived there, but I have actually been in, traveled to a couple of states that you would call police states, at least four or five I can think of off the top of my head. And you just, the feeling, I just, unless you've been there, I can't explain it to you.
Yeah,
you know it, and I know it from being there. You're scared, you're walking and you're scared, like, what to say, what to do, and if I cry, you know, what if I jaywalk? Will they throw me in the back of some prison and torture me? You know, what if I say the wrong thing? You know, I mean, you just, I remember being told when I, you know, and again, I'm not trying to cast aspersions, but I remember being told when I was in Thailand that if I, you know, kissed my girlfriend in public, I could be thrown in a fucking prison.
Wow.
If I insulted the king to anything negative, I could be thrown in a prison. Okay? Like, again, the difference is, and that wasn't even a full totalitarian state. That was just more of a sort of semi-autocratic state, at least when I was there. I don't know. It may have opened up more now. It is a, like, you just don't feel secure. You don't feel safe. You feel like people are watching you all the time. You don't know kind of what you can do and what you can't do. It's arbitrary. Somebody with power but no accountability can suddenly decide, eh, I saw something I don't like about you, and you can be arrested. Again, voting is a privilege. Democracy is a privilege. We have fought for it. People have died for it. We fought a civil war over equality. We fought other wars. Fought against Nazism. We fought against the Soviets and their version of totalitarian communism. I mean, I'm sorry, but if you can't get yourself out to vote for a terrific, fantastic, you know, first-time candidate in so many ways that represents the best in all of us, and you can't do that, then you don't deserve the privilege of living in this country. That's how I feel.
Yes, totally agree. But first, we have to take a quick break, and we'll be back after this message. Hey, it's Kimberly, the host of the podcast you're listening to right now. Please visit patreon.com/startmeup to support the show. You'll see all the different tiers. Make your choice. Support the show today. Thanks so much. And now I want to bring this over to the National Association of Black Journalists event yesterday, because, oh my God, but this is kind of like a... This,
is
this
Kamala
is,
black or Indian? I don't
well, I think she turned... Didn't she turn black recently? But
it's kind of cool how you can do that. Like, you just sort of snap your fingers somehow. I mean, can I turn like anything I want? Like, is that how this works? What if I want to be able to be a... What if I'm a white guy and I want to be a better dancer? Can I snap my fingers and like that'll happen? Because I just want to know... You know, where this begins.
Where's this mechanism where we can just switch over? But you know what? This is actually kind of twofold, because I want to say, you know, not to diminish the danger that Donald Trump poses, but, you know, people are asking about why did he feel so free to be so racist in front of that group? Because we're hearing him say you won't have to vote anymore. Now, this is where I don't want to diminish the danger, because obviously there are electors in place to not certify the election, and that's real. But I just want to remind everybody that Donald Trump, prior to becoming president, was chasing Obama with birtherism, the whole Central Park Five thing. He's been an open racist his whole life. And I think that especially right now,
back to when he was running his dad's.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it's his
and
dad
was
racist.
C for what Brian Kilmeade uses on Fox to describe Kamala Harris's sorority, colored, which, yes, Brian Kilmeade literally.
Yeah, I know. I heard him say that.
I think he's in his 50s and somehow decided that was an okay word to use, even though I don't think I ever heard it in my lifetime outside of racist people. But okay, that is what, in the 70s, Donald Trump would mark down on things so that they wouldn't let any black tenants. And I mean, he has been a racist since the first moment you could be one.
And he knows that if he uses that as an angle, it gets his base riled up. He this guy is used to being on softball interviews and rallies, where when he says all this crappy stuff, everybody applauds. Let me go back, all this weird stuff, you know, people applaud him. They don't fight him on it. So he feels emboldened. And so I'm not saying that there isn't reason to be, you know, alarmed with all these elector things. But I don't know how much of this kind of bravado and attitude that he had yesterday was because he was convinced he was going to win. It's just who he is. But
I mean, I got to be honest. He just did that because he's a dick.
He's a dick.
I mean, in all seriousness, that wasn't about his bravado. His thing. He doesn't think Donald Trump, somebody described it this way, and I think it was actually one of the people that worked for him, which makes it even better. Donald Trump is a goldfish. You know what I mean? Like, he does everything in the moment and then turns around 30 seconds later.
Yeah.
Like, he not only does he have no concept of the long-term future, he has no concept of 5 minutes from now or a minute, which is why he can lie with such reckless abandon, because he doesn't, he is very, very mentally deranged. He has serious mental and emotional issues. And this is before the dementia started kicking in. He always has. He is a sociopath. He is a pathological narcissist. He has all sorts of problems. He cannot fathom, you know, what responsibility is for his actions for doing anything. So, and then you add on a black woman challenging to his face. One of the reasons he doesn't want to go debate, because he knows he can't hold the line against her. She'll kick his ass in the debate. He'll lose his shit, and God knows he may throw the N-word out. So he just doesn't want to even show up there. So no, it wasn't because he thought he could win. And yes, are these people that have said they won't certify electors a threat? Of course they are. I mean, of course, state legislatures, where people are saying that, are, which is why, hey, Merrick Garland, get off your fucking ass, or maybe you already have, and I don't know about it, and then if you have, I will apologize. In every single one of these states that has electors that are loyal to Trump and deny, you know, fake electors and denying the election, like electors that could literally block this thing, you need to fucking go out. This is like the elections in the 60s in Mississippi. And during the times of when we had to send out the Department of Justice to ensure that black voters got the right to vote where they were supposed to be able to vote. This is no different. We've done it before. The only difference now is, sadly, it's not just in one region of the country. But it also is mostly in certain areas of the country, if you know what I'm saying. Like, I don't think you have to send a DOJ to Milwaukee. You probably do to numerous rural counties in Wisconsin. Okay? You know, that's the way this happens. And if you don't do that and you let these people get away with it, fucking, you should rot in hell, because I've got nothing else to say.
Yeah. You know what? I want to ask you a question on this, because I was thinking about this last night. We know obviously in 2016, and I don't have all the details to describe this correctly, but you'll get the gist of what I'm saying. But, you know, on election night, they saw, Trump's team saw that he was losing in those three key states, and they had this fast push on social media, pushing Jill Stein and all that. And, you know, I mean, that we don't know exactly what degree that changed the election, but a lot of people put emphasis on that. So my question to you,
the Russians also had polling areas that Manafort had handed over to them. So the question is, maybe they amplified certain messages on social. I mean, not maybe, they obviously did.
They did.
We don't know whether those messages changed things or not. Look, I had a brilliant former professor as an undergrad, whose name is Kathleen Hall Jamison. She's an expert in rhetoric, communications, these kinds of things, written many books, was the head of the Annenberg Center at Penn when I was there. And she finally decided she was going to cross that line after the 2016 election, because she'd always remained nonpartisan, and wrote a book. And her book was, it analyzed the rhetoric and what the Russians did online and offline and all of that. And the conclusion she came to, looking at every available factor, is they tipped the election in Trump's favor.
Right. And so with that in mind,
that as you will,
with that in mind, and the understanding that Trump in 2016 was likely aware of those numbers, at this point where we are, where Donald Trump's fucking weird brain is, because he's running to stay out of jail and all the other stuff that, you know, whether he has dementia, there's definitely mental decline. Do you think that if they see polling right now that's showing him lose, they're going to show it to him?
That's a hell of a good question. I mean, you know, when his vice president wasn't going to accept the electors, he tried to get him hung.
Yeah.
So, I'm not sure they will. If I were them, and I don't want to give them any good advice, because they all deserve to suffer for everything they've done to our country.
Yeah.
But I would already, you know, they always refer to it in like the CIA and whatever as a go bag. in case you need to like get out of the country in 90 minutes. Yeah. I would have a go bag loaded with 15 forms of currency, maybe 5 different passports. You might need, you know, whatever else you need, like one change of clothes, mm-hmm. you know, like a Jason Bourne thing. I mean, mm-hmm. just ready to get the fuck out of here.
If
he loses.
Yeah, because I'm going to say, you know, I mean, I don't know if they're telling him the truth on this, but with all of his arrogance and assuming that he's going to win, maybe he, you know, maybe part of the reason he assumes he's going to win is forget the polls, just what he's being shown. And they're making him happy because we all know that they tell him what he wants to hear. Sometimes they had to show him like color pictures in order to keep his, you know, attention and make him understand things because he's not very fucking bright. And I don't know. I just think because he's a narcissist, you know, that whole thing yesterday where he was so racist and so unbelievably rude to everybody, I think, you know, he's going in there with this idea like, oh, it's in the bag, I got it. And nobody's going to challenge him on that because he'll have their head, literally. So, yeah, I just think that's an interesting thing that may not have been in place.
No, I mean, and I don't think that's happened during any of these elections, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure they've been honest. Anybody's been fully honest with them about where things were because, you know, they thought they were going to lose that 2016 election to the last moment. Even with all the shit they were doing, they thought they were going to lose. I don't believe they told them that. They knew they were going to lose toward the end of 2020, and I don't believe they told them that.
Yeah.
I mean, again, when you're dealing with a sociopath, when you're dealing with a creepy, weirdo, mm-hmm. freak sociopath who you don't know what he's going to do, how he's going to respond, I think, you know, and you are who you are, mm-hmm. Which is a grifting piece of shit, willing to trade in everything that you may have believed in, you know, your country, your honor, just anything for the money you make from supporting this guy, then you are who you are and you deserve what you get. But you're probably at that point smart enough to know he's unhinged and you're not going to let him know things that would lead him to lose his shit on you. That'd be my guess.
But
I'm not inside that world and I've never lived in a cult like Ginny Thomas did,
right?
Or a totalitarian country like Seb Gorka did, or, you know, all the other collection of fucking weirdos that make up MAGA.
Well, okay.
But that's not, well, you lived in a totalitarian country, but you lived there for a different reason.
Right.
Seb lived there because Seb lived in Hungary as it was going fascist and, or at least going authoritarian and embraced a group that literally was founded by the original post-World War II Nazis and was a neo-Nazi group. He purposely joined them. So that makes him a little different than you.
Yeah, just a little bit. I want to quickly...
Also, he's got an really ugly beard.
He's just so...
Like
he's
idiot,
a talk about weird.
PhD, is one of the more unattractive men on this earth and is really a waste of oxygen. And so those are all ways he's different than you, too.
Okay, I want to quickly go over this because this is kind of making me laugh. First of all, I just want to say that I'm so grateful that, and at least for now, we are the ones on offense, right? Usually we're in the defensive mode. Republicans are accusing and saying all this shit, and we're always trying to defend. Now we're on offense. And so this GOP meltdown for the White Dudes for Kamala is so fucking epic. I just want to read this. You must be familiar with Matt Walsh, but for those who are not, he is just like a dude bro blogger, very misogynistic, racist,
wonder if his wife is like a handmaid or something.
I'm sure she is.
I don't see how anybody voluntarily would marry that person.
I know, but she's one of them.
In every trait in every way I can think of.
She's a total handmaid. Okay, so this is what he tweeted the other day, and this was fucking awesome. He said, "Note for the Republicans, Kamala has all the big name entertainers on her side, all of them, and she hasn't even pulled out the big guns yet. The Taylor Swift rally appearance will happen soon enough. Please do not try to counter this by parading around a bunch of washed up or obscure entertainers that nobody cares about. That just makes us look sad and irrelevant. Best to bow out of the celebrity competition and argue that we should focus on policy instead. It's the only hand we have to play. It can work, but if you undermine it, you will make fun of... And if you make fun of Megan Thee Stallion and then 2 days later start fangirling over some third-rate celebrity endorsing Trump, we need consistent messaging on this." And it's like, oh my God, he's
saying
it.
Wait, who wrote this?
Matt Walsh. You know who he is, right?
Yeah, okay. I know he is, of course, but like I lost it for a second. I apologize. I lost the plot there. Can you please send that to me?
Yeah, it's a tweet.
That's a YouTube video for me.
Okay.
Like I can do a Where Are They Now showing like, you know, the right-wing celebrities that love Trump and who they've tried to push are just, again, they're the same thing. Remember, MAGA is made up of the angry, resentful, and the dispossessed. You know this because you went out to Hollywood. You were trying to be an actor for a long time, and you have actually a healthy disposition, a healthy psychology. And so whatever, I think you changed your mind at some point or whatever it was, but you kept doing productive things in society. You made a career for yourself. It's been great. But the problem with right-wingers are is when they try to do things and fail at them, they blame the rest of the world.
Yeah, it's everybody else's fault.
So Breitbart himself, Andrew, who passed away over many years ago, originally went out to Hollywood to be an actor, and he failed because he sucked. So what happened was, he became a right-winger, angry at the Hollywood establishment because they wouldn't accept him. You can find a half dozen others like that, too, who wanted to be celebrities so badly, want to be successful. So what do you think happens when it's the Scott Baios and the Ted Nugents and the people of the world
and
that
Kevin
are always
Sorbo.
On, like, the C-ticket, right?
Yeah.
They're always the opener at the event, or they're always on the C-list, or sometimes they don't make it at all.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're Ricky fucking Schroeder, you know? I mean, what happens is you get angry at the entire world. The world fucks you. Hey, why aren't I a star of a movie like George Clooney? You know, why aren't I a star of a movie like Russell Crowe? And what it comes down to is that they resent everything just because they've failed. And they can't accept that that's their failure. You know, I have failed at a number of things. And the person who failed was me.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
Yeah.
Because you grow and you move on and you do other things. They are stuck at, like, they're 6-year-olds or 12-year-olds or whatever they are. They never grew up. So they blame it on the rest of the world. It's the rest of the world's fault for not seeing Scott Baio's brilliance, you know, or James Woods, you know, who actually had roles.
No, he was actually a good actor. Yeah,
a leading man is what he should be. The only exception to that I can find, there's a few. The only exception I can find to that is in the pre-cocaine days, at least, Dennis Quaid was a pretty decent actor. But I guess now maybe it's all gone to his head. And I will give credit where credit's due. You know, the only one I can think of, John Boyd is a good actor.
He was real.
His politics
suck. That movie, Coming Home, oh my God, is one of my favorite movies of all time. And it's crazy to me that he's a Trump supporter after he played that role.
Deliverance was a phenomenal movie. And you think the message of Deliverance, he might
exactly.
get it.
Yeah.
You know, but he's a right-winger. I don't get why. That's his own thing, you know. And so I'm not sitting here like the right does and pretending that all of their celebrities are terrible.
Right.
I look at them all individually, and there are a couple of exceptions where there actually are people that are talented, and I just don't understand it.
Well, I mean,
but
I look at Roseanne,
and the majority of them are dispossessed losers who hate the world for the fact that they've failed.
Exactly. And I mean, you take somebody like Roseanne. I think she's got literally, and I'm not saying,
she's mental health issues.
But I mean, she was also, for me, incredibly entertaining growing up in the 90s. I knew she was just wretched to work with. It was not a big secret in Hollywood. And I mean, not because I was in Hollywood. You could live in Ohio and know that. But I mean, I liked her show. And I mean, unfortunately, I can't even fucking deal with her anymore because she's just so disgusting. But again, mental health issues. But I want to just go back to this whole thing about the meltdown, because Jesse Waters basically said men voting for men turns men into women. Now, he said that with a little twinkle in his eye, like he knew he was bullshitting. But the thing is that message goes out to those stupid, rabid MAGA people who just take it as gospel and they run with it. And they're like, they think they can't vote for a woman because it's going to turn them into whatever scares them.
it's like this meltdown is
hilarious, because it's so, doesn't it feel fucking amazing to finally be on the offense ever since that escalator ride? It's like we've been we don't have the media, the corporate media, on our side. The corporate media ignores everything good about our administration and only focuses on whatever they and if there is nothing bad, they manufacture something bad. I think, like, the headline that came out today from the Washington Post put all the onus on Kamala Harris because Donald Trump accused her of, you know, changing from Indian to black. What the fuck? I mean,
again, corporate media, you know, I just said this, I was on my friend Tony Michael's show right before this. You know, there was a period of time, and I think this describes a couple of them, Because again, whenever we make everything black and white, when we don't look at nuance, we're becoming like them. But I think there's a couple of there's, first of all, some amazing corporate media outlets, as I've told people. The Philadelphia Inquirer, which called on Donald Trump to drop out of the race after the debate, the only paper that did that.
Right.
The Cleveland Plain Dealer, whose editor wrote a note to the haters attacking him, saying, "You're going to cover Donald Trump just as he is. He's somebody who will not respect the results of this election. And that means when Biden deserves it, it's at the time Biden was in the race, we'll go after him. But we are going to concentrate on the things, you know, that with dishonesty. And most of that has come from Donald Trump, blah, blah, blah." Mm-hmm. So I'd say to everybody right now, the Washington Post with this terrible headline today. And I've been running this online. I think I've gotten hundreds of people already who've responded to me. So they've done this. Unsubscribe from the New York Times.
Yeah.
Unsubscribe from the Washington Post. They are pieces of shit. They do not. They are not anymore what they used to be. You will get terrific news from the Philadelphia Inquirer and from the Cleveland Plain Dealer. And you will be showing newspapers that support democracy, mm-hmm. That there is actually a bonus for supporting democracy. That it's not just the right thing to do, that they will prosper because of it.
Yeah.
So that is my advice to you. Otherwise, most, I'd say about 80 to 90% of corporate media sucks. And there's a few in there that will both sides it because they're wimps. But I do believe at this point, there's a whole big number of them, and I believe the New York Times is among them, mm-hmm. Who want Donald Trump to win.
Yeah, and well, I will say
it
the
is
one...
profits, ratings, ad revenue over country.
Yes, and Mother Jones got it right. I believe it was David Corn's headline, "White man tells black journalist his black opponent is not black." That's the way you do it. That's the headline. And so, you know, I mean, I think thankfully David Corn, you know, I wasn't happy when he didn't full throttle Joe Biden to drop out, but he was kind of one of those voices. And frankly, I mean, I've said this before on my show last week, but I hated the way that was handled. I think the way that it was handled with Joe Biden, it was cruel and unnecessary. He could have dropped out under different circumstances.
I think it should have been handled behind the scenes.
Yes,
and I said that
not
too.
So publicly. Yeah.
I don't like the way it was handled publicly, but I do think, again, we have to all remember what we're up against here. And, you know, and you're smart enough to know it, and the fact of the matter is that it was cruel. It wasn't right. But we have to remind ourselves that this is about us.
Right.
Right? That Joe Biden, either way, whether he was going to be the nominee or not, has lived an incredible life, mm-hmm. yes, marked by tragedy, with losing family and all that, but, you know, and that's horrible. But when it comes to the life he has lived, he was a two-term vice president, he was the president of the United States, he will go down as a top 10 president,
yeah.
I promise you, once they've added up the 70-year, best economy in 70 years, and the infrastructure package that rebuilt us, and the getting shots in arms and getting us out of the pandemic, and getting things passed that no one thought could be done, like mm-hmm. like the Medicare negotiating prices for prescription drugs, which pharma was fighting against, and that gun control bill that stopped the boyfriend loophole, which again, a lot more needs to be done, but even getting that boyfriend loophole closed, which if you don't know what it is, you know, if you were a domestic violence perpetrator, that was defined as you lived with somebody, you had a child with them, or you were married to them, one or those three or more. If you just were a boyfriend, it didn't stop you from getting a gun. So if you beat your girlfriend, but you weren't married and didn't have a kid and didn't live with her, you could still buy a gun. That's fucking ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And he got that closed, and the Republicans were blocking that forever. So I'm just saying, I'm going a long list of them here. And so what I'm telling you is Joe Biden lived an amazing life. He'll be remembered as an amazing president. He'll
Absolutely.
Be remembered for everything he did in the Senate. He'll be remembered for sponsoring and getting the Violence Against Women Act passed, helping the Brady Bill pass, all these things he did. So, yes, we can feel bad for what happened to him, but we cannot let it overcome the fact that he's going to be okay.
Yeah, no, he's...
We need to make sure all of us are okay.
And this, it's very clear because, you know, I mean, I love... On my patrons only show, I talk about spirituality and all this stuff. And there's this term quantum jumping, which I believe happened that Sunday, because it was like we were all in this kind of collective. I don't even know
Malaise.
What the word, you know,
fighting was crazy.
Well, and I was afraid to look at the computer because I was like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And then it, you know, of course, when it first happened, I felt sick, but then it took a few hours and all of a sudden everybody started feeling lighter. Everybody started feeling better. It happened immediately. There was this unification that was astounding in the Democratic Party. All the endorsements start, you know, rolling in.
Yep.
Money comes in.
The fact that it went that way was huge to me because, I have to tell you, I first stood steadfastly by Biden after the debate. And I was there for at least a week, week and a half. I wanted to see what the results were. And if the media had treated it the way they treat mm-hmm. Donald Trump's rape, which they refuse to talk about, then we would have been fine. Mm-hmm. And we would have moved on, because there were some people who listened to the debate, didn't even see it, actually thought Biden won.
Yes.
Right? It was the visual imagery that was the problem. Mm-hmm. And I would have been fine. And I was a loyal guy. And again, I wrote ads for Biden in 20. I don't work for him now. Haven't worked for him since he became president. So I just want to be clear, but I like to disclose that. But I was loyal to him then. But then when I'll be honest with you, when I started seeing numbers coming in about 2 weeks later, mm-hmm. I started opening my mind to, we may need to switch to Kamala. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure, but I was opening my mind to it. And the reason I was doing it was, it's not that I still thought Biden was the favorite to win. When he added in a great economy, incumbency, his opponent's a fucking felon, you know, these things that we're dealing with, all these other factors that are much more important than the polling of a moment. But he was barely like a 55-45 mm-hmm. kind of proposition at that point. And we were going to get blown out. We need John Tester to hold on to that Senate mm-hmm. seat in Montana. He was going to get blown out. We need Sherrod Brown to hold on here.
Yeah.
He likely was going to lose. And if we don't have the Senate. So he was thinking about things like that. And mm-hmm. I finally became open-minded, and my position became, if they can switch it over to Kamala so we don't go through this stupid civil war, it's going to be much worse than having Biden as the nominee. We're all screaming and yelling, a food fight with six Democrats who want to be the nominee. Mm-hmm. If it can be passed over to Kamala, she'll get Biden's money like nobody mm-hmm. else, or whatever. I can get behind that. And that's what ended up happening. And that's
and what scared me, and I think what scared a lot of people, was we weren't sure if the country was going to, how the country was going to respond to her. And,
yes.
you know, I mean, that's, it's like we were talking about earlier with Shapiro. It's like, there's just not being ready, and we weren't sure. And this obviously is showing us in a way that surprised so many, including myself, boy, are we ready. And what's really great is, you know, when I go out in public and I talk to people.
A poll just showed us, you know, like the gains that she's had since she went in.
Yeah.
The excitement for this young, diverse candidate that reminds me of Obama. Mm-hmm. The charisma, which reminds me of Obama and Clinton, mm-hmm. which I kept saying I knew she had and would be able to do. And prosecuting the case that she has. The mockery she's done, that she's done all the stuff we wanted her to do about hitting back and all that. And you, and on top of it, everyone endorsing her, all these other great mm-hmm. young Democratic leaders, your Gretchen Whitmers, your Gavin Newsoms, your, you know, whoever yeah. coming out for her the way they did. And that whole rollout, which was fucking perfect, whether they planned it perfect or it just went that way,
yeah.
versus Donald Trump imploding most recently at the Black Journalist Conference, but right after saying dumb shit and losing his mind yeah. and doing all of that and then picking J.D. Vance, who has been a huge drag. We've seen the biggest polling increase for somebody in 2 weeks that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, she is going in a 20-point or something positive direction. She's now beating him in every swing state. And again, I take polls with a grain of salt, but the movement has made sense in light of all of this media saturation. Mm-hmm. Hey, the only one that she's, I think, tied or whatever in Georgia. I think she'll win Georgia in the end. And she hasn't even beat the vice president. We still have the vice presidential pick. They don't. We still have our convention. They don't. They not only the first people to not get a bounce, so the first people get a negative bounce out of their convention.
Yeah, and what I'd like to say about the polling, this is important for me, because when I look at the polling in the overall sense, I don't think it's accurate. You can go back to 22 and every poll since then.
Yeah, has I never been, think it's accurate.
Right, but here's what I say. When it comes to the bumps are important because when we're, you know, if we've got poll, like I think this, maybe the polling is going to show Kamala winning at like 277 electoral votes, right? Where I think she's really going to win by a lot more. And that's where I think the polling is off. But when you have these little bumps and show that he's falling and she's rising, when we have slim margins and we have, you know, that when the election is over and he claims and she wins and he's claiming that it's rigged, it's going to be a lot harder with these polls because he can't point to the polls. Now, I've heard people on social media say, well, he's going to do it anyway. Of course he's going to do it anyway. There's going to be judges. There's going to be people in power yeah. who are going to be deciding this. And those judges are not going to listen to someone who, when the polling said she was going to win and then she won, he has, his argument falls apart, at least in the polling area. So that's a good thing. I just think right. the polling isn't representative yeah, of the much bigger also, picture.
Look, I'll say this because I was a pollster. I worked in the industry. You know, when I started off in politics, right now, polling's broken. Mm-hmm. Public polls are done as PR stunts. They're done just like everything else in New York Times and these places do for ratings, for reading, for whatever. They don't give a shit about accuracy. You've seen them put out polls. They've actually, you'll find it not until like paragraph 14, but they'll put caveats about how their own polling sucked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So you end up seeing all of that, and you know, and whatever. So the only value I would tell you that public polls have now is in comparing apples to apples, which yeah. is, you know, that they're likely going to have the same shitty, same shitty numbers and, you know, understanding of things that goes into any one of their polls will go into many of them. So if you want to get anything out of them, look at one of them from a week or two ago and compare it to itself now. Mm-hmm. That yeah. might tell you something, because yes. then it's apples to apples.
Apples to apples, exactly. Not,
but because it's the same polling group. So they were saying, you know, Biden was down 80 before, and now he's only down, and now Kamala's only down 60. Well, mm-hmm. we went 20 points in a positive direction.
Yeah.
They're wrong in their conclusion, and they're full of shit, but, you know what I mean? Like, that's the only way they're useful. Otherwise, they're garbage. The industry has not figured out how to handle the fact that a lot of people do not have landlines. People who do have cell phones do not answer. Like, the participation rates have gone through the floor. They don't know, you know, how to handle it. And, you know, you used to be able to use something called waiting, where you could wait mm-hmm. and make it so, okay, we've only got a 7% black sample, but it should have been 10%. You could wait it. You can't wait a sample 90% and have it come out accurately, right? I mean, if you're not getting enough people to talk to you, there's a point where waiting it doesn't help anymore.
Right.
You're changing the entire basis of the poll. So just most of them, if you know, most of them are garbage going in, you're fine. And, you know, J.D. Vance will keep attacking cat ladies, and new clips will keep coming out with him saying that, did you just say childless people are sociopaths?
Yeah, I mean, really.
There's a winner of a message. You're going to do great.
Okay, Lindsey Graham is a sociopath.
J.D. Vance says, hey, this is just scary. Yeah. J.D. Vance says people who don't have children are, quote, sociopathic, psychotic, and deranged.
Yeah.
Yes, there's a man who doesn't need help.
I know. Oh, my God. Well, the you know, I could go on and on, but I know you got a life. I got a life. So we're going to end it here. But
do we really?
I'm excited. It feels really good to be excited, finally. And, you know, we've got less than 100 days to go. I think we're going to do this. But everybody just needs to make those margins not slim so that they have a harder time fighting. So anyway, tell everybody where to find you, Cliff.
You can find me at YouTube. That's the best place. Cliff's Edge, you know, youtube.com/Cliff's_Edge, I believe it is. We just broke 50,000 subscribers.
Woo-hoo!
So I know, isn't that pretty cool?
Yeah.
And so that is like the best place right now. I'm also still on that health Twitter machine. you know, I hate it, but I'm on there. You can find me at Cliff Schechter on there and at CD Schechter on Threads.
Very cool.
But come by, because cool, I'm really trying to make the YouTube channel a messaging hub, promoting young, talented Democrats hub. Like, that's what I've been at for a long time now. It's so nice to see some of these things come to fruition. Not, again, saying I did anything, but maybe I played a small role, and I'm just going to keep doing it.
Yeah, we all play. We all have small roles. Yeah, we all have small roles to play. And I appreciate your videos, because the thing is there are, you know, I mean, I follow certain people and get cues and inspiration from their messaging. You're one of them. So, you know, I like listening to AG. Obviously, I listen to Bob. I listen to my mom. And there are people that I like to hear their take on it, because even, you know, I may borrow one of the things you say, or it helps me form my argument and make it stronger. So you are appreciated in what you do. And it's not surprising that your YouTube channel is growing, because you're funny and you understand it. So thanks for being on the show, Cliff. You know, I adore you. So thank you for being here.
It goes both ways.
All right. Well, I'm sure we'll talk before the election. Have a good one.
All right. You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.